Welcome to the Green 19 podcast. I'm Dominique Yates. I'm joined by Ryan Wood and Tom Silverstein. We've gone through about 3 days of training camp with some pads on, and we've been able to get some observations and take a look at these Packers. And I guess the number one takeaway that I've been able to notice is that, I mean, there's the intensity, the spirits have been high. It's been some physical play out there early on with guys. You can, I guess, sense that early adrenaline finally getting pads on. And, you know, you even have some of those guys trying to, I guess, earn spots out there. And I guess you can start it off, Ryan. What have been your observations just from now that there's been some padded practices out there?
Well, I think it'd be fitting to start off here with some understanding of the rules of engagement, okay? So no matter what happens on this podcast, I promise not to hit you guys after the whistle. That's not going to happen. I'm not going to pull you to the ground. We're going to stay in these chairs. We're going to take care of each other because we're teammates, and that's what teammates do. Unlike what happened in Tuesday's practice, which was a bit of a fiasco. I mean, Tom, I liked what you said walking in when you were talking with me and Pete. And I'm thinking, like, maybe I was a little too prisoner of the moment. I'm thinking, like, boy, that was about as breaking the rules of engagement more often than I'd seen in maybe ever. And you're like, you remember that practice when Josh Sitton was swinging his helmet around at people? I'm like, okay, that's a fair point. It does happen. But, yeah, I mean, Matt LaFleur was not happy. Sent Rashid Walker for a lap, what I took from that is the fact that Josh Jacobs, Tucker Kraft, Zach Tom, some other players on the offensive line joined him for that lap.
Very Coach Carter.
Solidarity there.
Very Coach Carter.
as far as Thursday goes, it was dialed back, and they didn't have any real football period, any live tackling. I didn't see many people on the ground or taking the necessary shots. I thought it was about the cleanest they've been all camp so far. But finally, they took care of each other, unlike Tuesday.
Yeah. I mean, it's football, right? But there is some rules there that, like you say, kind of playing in between the whistles. I mean, at least from your vantage point, from what you've seen, not only even last year, Spoon, at least the physicality, the intensity, you know, do you feel like they're starting at a level even maybe different from last year, maybe more physical? Because they talked about the need of wanting to be a more physical football team after some of those losses that they had.
I don't see them more physical. I talked to a neutral observer after practice or during practice, and he said to me, they look faster. You know, they just look like a faster defense. And I think that's part of where physicality comes from, is being able to get to the play, being able to square up and make some hits. But physicality is not a word. I gotta stop saying that. Being physical.
It's not?
It's not.
I said it so many times, I forgot. Sure.
Well, I don't know if it is, but it's a cliche, whatever it is. Being physical is something that comes with the individual player. You know, everybody can rally to the ball and go after the ball and all that, but the thing that separates, you know, a player from Nate Hobbs is that Nate Hobbs plays the game on the edge. You know, he plays with all the intensity and fire and desire to make you hurt after the play. I don't know how many of those guys they got. They haven't had a lot in the past. They have a guy like Edrin Cooper who can thump you with his speed. They've got, you know, McKinney can do that. Evan Williams is built pretty well. But I don't see them like totally different. I just see individually that there's some elements that could raise the level of how they play.
You know, the thing that I noticed, and I don't know if you put this in the being physical category, but from early in camp, they are punching, punching, punching at the football. I mean, every rep they are attacking the football. And every defense and every Packers defense, they're going to take their shots. But it's like every rep. And then Jeff Hafley tells us that the number one emphasis in this camp for his defense is forcing more fumbles. Yeah. He said that they took the ball away last year. They didn't force enough fumbles, which I thought was interesting because when you look at the takeaway stats, they were – fourth in the league in the number of takeaways. They were third with 17 interceptions. They were third in 14 fumbles recovered. So it's not like they didn't recover fumbles last year. But it was a strength. I mean, you're top five in the league. But he wants even more, and they've got, what, the ball king now? Wendell Davis, their quality defensive control coach, is now the ball king, and they start every defensive meeting out with the ball king, talking about the ball, talking about punching, trying to attack the football. I've noticed a ramp up in that. I don't know if you put that in the being physical category, but it's certainly evident.
This is a question. I don't know. This might be more for a coach, but I'm going to call you Coach Spoon today. As far as that mentality of wanting to force fumbles in terms of trying to always like focus, rely solely on like those takeaways, do you think that is? I mean, I know it did work last year. Do you think that is a consistent recipe for success, or do you think this team even more so can focus on just, you know, lining up, playing hard-nosed football? Do you think the takeaway force fumble mindset is like a good recipe that you could rely on?
I think it can change a game. It's changed a game against the Packers. Christian Watson in the Detroit game gets, you know, sloppy with the ball, and that play turned that whole game around. You take that play, or if they score on that play, that's a different game. Tucker Kraft had a fumble on that. Josh Jacobs, I think, had a fumble against Seattle. They've been on the side of the team that fumbles as opposed to the team that causes the fumble. So if they can flip that, then yeah, I do think it means something. Okay. Now, I've seen teams that try to hold the guy up and punch the ball, and a guy like Josh Jacobs gains 8 more yards while they try to do it. So I think you can train for it, but more than likely your top athletes, your guys who are good at it anyway. I've never seen anybody go after the ball. Two guys, Charles Woodson and Peanut Tillman, just had this knack for putting their hand on the ball. And I don't know if they have guys who can do that, but if you can't naturally, then you might as well work on it. You might as well see if it's a skill you can develop.
Yeah. Sticking with the defense, here's a guy I wanted to talk about, and I know you even talked to him in the locker room this week, Bo Melton. It's really fascinating watching him, because sometimes when I would hear, like, oh, a wide receiver being moved to corner, that's like you're at the end, maybe, possibly, like a team's looking to move on from you. But you hear Rich Bisaccia, you hear all these other coaches, they just rave and they love this guy. And it seems to me like they're trying to do everything possible to make him a part of this Packers roster, you know. But what were your takeaways in your conversation with him, and just what they've been, like, even the coaches, what they've said about Bo out there?
Two things really told me that Bo Melton has a decent shot at making the 53 as a cornerback. And Spoon, if you disagree, just slap me. All right, we're between the whistles right now.
Right.
Rich Bisaccia saying that he believes Bo Melton can be an elite special teamer. And Jeff Hafley saying that he was excited when Matt LaFleur kind of told him, like, yeah, we want to do this move permanent. But he also was like, okay, let's take a step back here. Let's understand that this is not something that Bo Melton's going to learn how to do in a week. It might not even be something he really fully grasped in a training camp. This is a very difficult move, but he sees the potential long term. And when he talked with Bo Melton at the start of camp, that's when they reported, that's when Bo Melton learned that it would be a permanent move, because going back to the spring, it was kind of like up in the air, 50-50, you're going to play some receiver or some corner. It was when he reported that it became full-time. Jeff Hafley told Bo Melton, look, there's going to be a couple practices early on. You're going to feel like you're totally spun around. You're not going to know left to right. You're not going to know what's up and down. Don't get frustrated. This is not something we expect you to grasp immediately. And so if you are excited about the potential, if you think that it's going to require some patience, you're willing to provide that, and you think in the short term that he could potentially be an elite special teamer, that is a guy who is likely to make the 53. Now, it doesn't mean he will, but what we got to see can't play out. But there's a real chance there, even if Bo Melton struggles. Now, I don't know what you've thought, Spoon, from the first week of practice, but from what I can see, Bo Melton is generally, in terms of coverage, in the right position. He looks like he's grasping the coverage principles well. I think that the biggest adjustment for him, and I spoke with Bill Melton about this, is just going to be that, you know, it's one thing to be in the right position. It's the other thing to be in the right position and then to play the football and attack the football, being able to do that as a corner when you're used to just catching footballs all the time from the quarterback running routes and you're the intended receiver. No longer being the intended receiver is a totally different vantage point, trajectory from attacking, playing the football than what he's grown up with. That's, I think, the real step for him. But in terms of just being where he's supposed to be, I think for the most part, he's there.
Yeah. Well, I noticed today that they had him running second team, which was the first time that they've done that. Now, it was just quick. They were rotating the corners quickly. I watched him in one-on-ones. He had a really nice pass break. He was right in a guy's grill the entire time. I can't remember who it was.
Yeah.
But it's I don't put anything by him. The question is, how do they fit him on the 53-man roster? You could only have so many special teams guys. But there is this factor that you keep working that corner, but you could activate him and maybe not necessarily have to have five receivers active, that you could throw him. He could be a two-way player, because I don't think it would take much for him to jump over to the other side of the ball and help you out there. So, you know, that's where they could justify possibly having him on the 53 and then maybe on the game day.
You know, he even told me today that even now he still doesn't feel like receivers left him. He hasn't been in a single receiver meeting all camp. He's exclusively DB right now. But he said that the only way to really learn a new position, especially that position, is to indulge and immerse yourself in that position.
Yeah,
so that's the focus.
No,
it's like even now he still identifies as someone who can go out there and play receiver. So I think to that point, Spoon, that there's a lot there.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff Hafley said himself, though, DB is the hardest position on the field when you're playing. So I would imagine if you're trying to learn this, you need to spend as much time as possible over there. Before we move to offense, for both of you guys, is there, I guess, what more are you interested in seeing from what the defense does in camp, or maybe a player or players in terms of what they do? I don't know, Ryan, you start off. Is there anything you're curious to see, and then Spoon?
Well, I think once the preseason starts, some of those guys up front, I'll be really curious, the pass rush. You know, that's the one thing that when it's practice reps, it's tough to really tell, you know, because – the quarterback's got a red jersey. They're not hitting that guy. Preseason games, that's when you can actually hit that guy. Lucas Van Ness has had a solid start to camp, but I want to see him in preseason. I want to see when it's live what happens there. You know, some of the interior guys, I don't think...
Yeah, like Nazir Stackhouse, yeah, guys like that.
You know, Warren Brinson, that'll be interesting. You know, I don't think that they're going to be... You know, Baron Sorrell, that's another guy. You know, he had a really nice burst in the backfield today. He dropped, I think it was 35 for a 4-yard loss. And, you know, but I don't think he was blocked on the play. But he's a guy that I've seen him line up outside, inside. You know, what can he do in the preseason? Your top line guys, like Kenny Clark, once the season starts, that's going to be a lot of intrigue there because he had that toe all last year. I don't know we're going to see much of any Kenny Clark in the preseason, mm-hmm. So we'll have to wait there.
We won't see many of those guys.
I would say the defensive front guys in the pass rush. That's the one thing that, for me, we still need to see more of.
Yeah. Anything for you defensively?
Defensively, yeah, I think the edge guys, you know, Van Ness for sure. I remember last year being – the pass rush was really good in training camp, and they were really getting after people. And I remember, you know, asking Preston Smith, well, is this for real? You know, how do I know? And, you know, he's like, so you're doubting us?
And I was you're right, too.
Yeah, well, it turned out, I mean, they were really good in training camp. Yeah. And then it turned out to not be so great. So you have to be really careful with assessments. But I, you know, looking, when you assess in training camp, it's individuals. So Lucas Van Ness is a guy. Want to see more of Bretton Cox. Want to see more of Isaiah Simmons. Want to see a little more of Kalen King. Mm-hmm. Things like that.
Yeah.
Bullard in the slot. a little more, you know, like really covering wide receivers and not just being a sort of a guy in the box. Mm-hmm. So those are some things, yeah.
Absolutely. Let's move into offense. I guess before we kind of dive deeper into, you just say, some of the takeaways, I guess the news from this week was Marshawn Lloyd. Since, you know, we last podcast, we haven't been able to talk about that. You know, what's the latest that you can update just as far as, you know, has he been around in camp? And, you know, just what have you heard? And even just from the situation, how it all unraveled to where he left the field.
Well, it was interesting because I thought live, and I think we all thought from the sideline, that Nate Hobbs kind of
hit him low,
crossed that line again, because he did hit him, but then he was exonerated.
The Packers thought he did too, because they held him out in the next series.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he did hit him, and you're not supposed to hit, so you can understand why. But then they watched the film, and Marshawn Lloyd's step before getting hit is the step that he came up lame on. And, you know, I still wonder. I get that they exonerated him off, Nate Hobbs off film. I still wonder if maybe that was a false step because Marshawn Lloyd's seeing the contact coming, and that might change the way that he took that step to try to brace himself a little bit. I don't know that. Maybe. I just wonder.
Hobbs said Lloyd went low, and so I went low, mm-hmm. which makes me think that he made that turn, and he felt the Hammond start going down. Mm-hmm. And so Lloyd – or Hobbs followed him down. Probably not the best, but it was probably a reactive mood, not expecting Lloyd to just go down like that in that situation. So it's possible that it was because of the lag. But regardless, it wasn't the worst hit that Nate Hobbs has ever had. And the bottom line is that Marshawn Lloyd is injured again.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, you think non-contact, you know, in the way that they were talking with Matt LaFleur about the adversity, I was wondering if it might be something real serious, you know. Mm-hmm. My first thought was ACL, and it's not that. It's a groin injury. But even still, groin injury can take time.
And he was out there today, though.
He was working out.
He was working out. Yeah, they had him moving a little bit. So I get the sense it's not terribly serious. But here's the thing. This guy has had hamstring problems. Yeah. Groins are often connected to hamstrings. And he's been through this whole offseason, evaluate his body, and he got hurt again. That's not a good sign.
It's not. No, I was thinking the same thing. Yeah. Matt LaFleur did say that it's not going to be this week that he returns. He's, you know, he's not going to. So that's, he said it does, it's not going to be long term, but the fact that it's, you know, midweek and he's already ruling not the rest of this week, it does make me wonder if this might go to midway through camp.
They got to get him in a preseason game.
They
got to get him at least two. The only thing he's done, he got hurt in that preseason game last year in Cleveland, like on his third carry, mm-hmm. and then he got hurt in,
was week two?
Was it the Chargers?
Week two.
Colts. Yeah.
Colts.
He got hurt week two against the Colts.
And so this guy hasn't played. No. They got to get him on the field.
The disappointing thing for him is I really felt, and I try not to even in practice make much of running back evaluations because, you know, getting tackled is the whole point of that game when you have the ball and they don't get tackled. So, but I thought that he had been running really well.
Yes.
He
broke
physical.
Off some, you know. He had a you could see the burst.
That's big, that, yeah.
You know, Josh Jacobs, for all of his greatness, doesn't exactly have that burst all the time. Like, he is a power runner. He will run you over. He will hit his gap very quick. He can break off some runs, but not in the home run hitting sort of way. They saw Marshawn Lloyd as kind of that potential home run hitter, that change of pace guy with Josh Jacobs. And you could see that kind of burst, and now here he is injured again. That setback is where it's disappointing.
Yeah, so it's going to be – I mean, obviously they've been in this situation all of last season, but I am curious just the dynamic of the running back room. And one thing Matt LaFleur said in terms of what he wants to see from the backups, he's like, well, the same thing I'd want to see from Josh Jacobs. But I don't know how much you've been able to observe, you know, what have been just those impressions on, you know, Emmanuel Wilson, Chris Brooks, even the newcomer, Israel Akabinata.
He had a nice run today.
He did.
He blasted through the middle.
Yeah.
He's really fast. But to me, the whole Marshawn Lloyd thing means pretty much locked Emmanuel Wilson into a roster spot, because you can't go in to the season with Marshawn Lloyd as your number two. And Chris Brooks isn't your number two. So Emmanuel Wilson's a pretty solid back. Mm-hmm. You know, he ran the ball pretty well and had decent numbers. I think that injury to Lloyd earned him a spot on the 53. So, and then it's, they'll keep Lloyd, and then do they keep Brooks? Yeah. I think that's the question mark.
Did you think there was any much doubt there with Emmanuel Wilson getting a roster spot going into camp?
I thought if Lloyd was just off the charts that they could maybe go without him and use Brooks as sort of the fullback type. And because I don't know that Emmanuel Wilson's going to be a 1,000-yard rusher or anything. He's good in the Packers system. He's got some talent. There's no question. But if Lloyd was going to just tear it up, then there's a chance he wouldn't be there.
Yeah, I kind of looked at him as he's that known quantity. Yeah. He had a really solid year last year, and the reliability, the durability. I thought the question was, more they're going to probably keep four running backs. So, because Chris Brooks is that fullback type role that I think Matt LaFleur really covets in his system.
Although, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but don't forget they use their tight ends that way. So if they decide to keep an extra tight end, that could eliminate
the fullback. John Fitzpatrick had a fullback rep today with on a keeper for Malik Willis. I thought that was interesting. So, yeah, maybe it comes down to a Chris Brooks or John Fitzpatrick. Like, who do you feel better on special teams? Who do you feel fits that fullback role more? Because they're two different positions, but they can both do that. But I really did think that there was a real chance that they'd keep four. And we'll see when Marshawn Lloyd gets back now, right? But if he's back sometime in camp, I still feel like there's a real chance for four running backs.
I want to talk about the tight ends as well, because I know we mentioned a little bit, but especially on Thursday, a guy who stood out was Luke Musgrave. It was a very active day from him. But honestly, he's been a consistent guy throughout camp from what I've been able to see. Made some catches, and it just seems like he's healthier and in a good place. And we spoke to him in the locker room, and he said one thing he did this offseason, he did Pilates. His wife is a Pilates instructor. I can only imagine what it'd be like to see an NFL tight end and just a group of people going through Pilates. But he said he's in a good place, and again, you're seeing just some more of that, just a different weapon and a different piece. We've talked about that tight end system, just, what have been the observations just on that tight end room with Musgrave, Kraft. But even on this Thursday, you saw Ben Sims. You mentioned John Fitzpatrick, guys getting involved, but in particular, Musgrave and Kraft.
Musgrave had a good day. He owes Jordan Love a beer for that throw he made that somehow got over Xavier McKinney's hand and
Valentine.
That throw couldn't. It was coming right at me, and I that could not have been a better throw. Just walked up there and threw it to him. But Musgrave to me, until I see that guy running down the seam with big gains, that's who he's supposed to be. Some of this stuff on the outs and whatever. I think a lot of guys can do that. I want to see him make big plays. That's what they drafted him for, because they thought he could run past people. So until I see that, I'm not really enamored. Tucker Kraft is their guy, and he could be their number one receiver this year. I mean, really, I think that's a strong possibility. Mm-hmm. He could lead the team in receptions.
Yeah.
So,
are you kind of in the same boat, just like with Musgrave, just got to see it?
With Musgrave, I think that what has been impressive with him is that his first 2 years, from an injury standpoint, you could not have scripted any worse. And yet he's still managed to, at times, not frequently enough because he hasn't been healthy, but at times show that there is something there. I'm thinking the catch he made in the finale against Chicago last year. He had two catches today in the third down period. The first was the best ball that Jordan Love's thrown in camp so far. The second, Jordan Love underthrew. Luke Musgrave had to come back for it. And it was very similar to that catch that he had against Chicago last year, where he comes back, he gets his hands underneath, he scoops the ball before it hits the ground. That ball, it was about 15 yards downfield. That kind of ball tracking, He's been able to make some plays. Now, the big thing with him is just it's similar to Marshawn Lloyd. Can he stay healthy? Because he just hadn't been able to. The difference between Luke Musgrave and Marshawn Lloyd is that Luke Musgrave's injuries have been contact injuries. They haven't been non-contact injuries. It's not like a tightly wound muscle situation. It's football. You know, he had a kidney.
Lacerated kidney?
Like, what are you going to do about that? He got hit. Like, that's what happens. That's the game of football.
Can you remember what his injury was last year?
Ankle.
It was ankle. Yeah, he got rolled up on. So these are contact injuries. I think that he's kind of a wild card because I think this is an offense designed to go a lot of multiple, a lot of 12 personnel. I think that would play to their strengths because if you have Luke Musgrave out there, that can take some of the pressure, the load off of Tucker Kraft and maybe get him more open. The question for Tucker Kraft to me, and I went up to Tucker Kraft this week in the locker room, I said, you'd probably know this better than me, but obviously Kansas City is an offense that features their tight end as a number one. Who else is out there? He's like Las Vegas, you know. And then neither of us thought about it at the time, but Baltimore, you know, is up there with Mark Andrews. There's not a lot of offenses that feature tight end as their number one option in the passing game. The Packers have a guy in Tucker Kraft who could do that. If you guys remember our question of the week midway through last year, who's the Packers' number one receiver? And it was supposed to be receiver, but I thought about it. I'm like, well, Tucker Kraft. Like, he's their best option as a pass catcher in this offense. And that was last year. For them to do that, though, what does Mark Andrews, Brock Bowers, and Travis Kelce all have in common? They're move guys that can make plays down the field. They're tight ends that play the game as a receiver. Tucker Kraft is a classic inline tight end who is as important to their block scheme as he is as a pass catcher, and because of that, it's hard to get him away from the line of scrimmage. Yeah. That to me has been the riddle they've had to figure out all offseason. I haven't seen that much in camp. I haven't seen the down.
Yeah, he hasn't been displaced at all.
Tucker Kraft told me that that's what he worked on. Separation against man coverage, what he worked on all offseason. He does expect that to come on later in camp once they get through their installs. But in terms of being that featured number one guy, which he has, I think, the talent, the potential to do, for him to do that, like, he's got to get downfield more often. It's not like he has to be better downfield. He had like 4 targets of 20 yards past the line of scrimmage last year, caught all 4. Like, anytime he's gotten that chance, he's done something with it. It just hasn't been enough opportunities downfield. How they do that, I'm not really sure.
Yeah, it's tough. He's basically George Kittle.
Yeah.
Which is, you got to be on the line of scrimmage because our run game, everything works off our run game, and we got to have the defense figuring that at least playing it to be a run instead of playing pass. And having him with his hand down, he's very good at getting off the ball and getting down the field. I have wondered, you know, could they displace him like Kelce? We'll see. You know, they always use him as a guy to try to determine what coverage the other team is. So they line him up wide and then they bring him back in line, and maybe they need to leave him out there and see what happens a couple times. But they could do it more if they had a blocking tight end to put in the game. Fitzpatrick's okay. Ben Sims is okay. Musgrave is not good.
No.
So, unfortunately for Kraft, the times he's going to be out in the slot is going to be probably not great.
Because the question is, what are you losing with blocking when you do that?
Yeah.
Right. He's so important what they do blocking.
Play action, it kills you. Right? He's so good at coming across the formation on the bootleg. Yeah, that's an easy 8-yard gain for them most times.
Yeah, but it is ironic because Musgrave said the two biggest things he focused on this offseason besides being healthy was run blocking. So we'll see if we'll see if it translates. It's like you say it, but we'll see if it translates. As we wrap up and talk a little bit more about the offense, just a couple of quick points. Offensive coordinator Adam Stanovich also talked, as well as Jeff Hafley. And I guess the big takeaways from him, he talked about the offensive line. And I was fascinated in just their mindset and their approach with this because, yeah, you can pencil in Elgton Jenkins at center, Aaron Banks, but it seems like, and Zach Tom at right tackle. But it seems like after that, that's about it. Like, those guard spots are open. Left tackle, that is an open
There's a competition now. There's a competition now.
With totally Rasheed Walker. After Jordan Morgan got all the snaps on we're talking on Thursday?
Yeah.
It's Thursday?
Yeah,
We're firmly in the I have no idea what day it is no portion day. Of my calendar.
Last day of July.
Yeah. But I guess, well, you know, just what are your thoughts on just that? Not only just what that competition looks like, but he made it sound like he doesn't care if it's week six or something like that. We're still rotating guys. We're still throwing out different bodies. It doesn't seem to bother him at all in terms of having, like, here's my guys. I'm going out there keeping that continuity.
Yeah, because I asked Adam Stanovich, when ideally do you need to know what your best five is going into the season? He's like, we really don't. Like,
yeah.
He made it very clear, and I believe him wholeheartedly because he's shown this in the past. He's done this in the past. He's done this with Rasheed Walker, Josh Nyman. He's done this with Jordan Morgan, Sean Ryan. He said – rotations are a thing, you know. A lot of offensive line coaches don't want to get into a rotation. They want your best five and just never leave the field on the offensive line. Adam Stanovich, Luke Butkus are not that way. They are totally open to rotations. They've done it before. It sure sounds like they're very open to doing that again. So I don't see Jordan Morgan taking all the left tackle snaps starting week one or maybe even week four. But I don't know that Rasheed Walker is going to be taking them all either. That might be a rotation. You know, there might be a rotation at right guard. I wonder if Jordan Morgan might play some snaps in a game at both positions. Yeah, I think they're going to just get really creative and be flexible, and that's what they'll do. And Adam Stanovich said, you know, he might play six or seven guys in a game. So we'll see. But no, you know, I saw the competition day at left tackle. Jordan Morgan took all those left tackle reps, and we'll just see how he does.
Yeah, I guess what were your takeaways?
Yeah, and don't write off Anthony Belton either. Just he's so massive. It's hard to get a feel for how he's doing because it's hard to focus in on the pass rush, especially when he's at right tackle and he's away from the formation. But I'm really curious. I really want to see him in a preseason game. And see if he's moving people, if he's engulfing people. You throw him in there, and all of a sudden, that's another factor. Travis Glover, for all the heat he took for the Eagles game, is a pretty good player. I think there's some potential there, and how they use him, too. He could be right guard. Mm-hmm. He's played a lot of right guard since he's been here. So... yeah, I think that'll be the most fascinating thing is who's the starting five come September 7.
Or the starting seven. I mean, when Adam Stanovich says six or seven players, that's Zach Tom, that's Elton Jenkins, that's Aaron Banks, that's Rasheed Walker, Sean Ryan, Anthony Belton, Jordan Morgan. And that's seven guys right there. If you throw in Travis Glover, maybe that's eight.
Jacob Monk.
Yeah, Jacob Monk's got a lot of reps. Mm-hmm. Like, There's depth here. I don't know the quality yet for all that depth, but there is a lot of numbers.
That's the million-dollar question, right? What is the quality of depth? Because in Philadelphia, we learned there was not much quality. There was quantity over quality.
Yeah. Well, what Philadelphia taught us was that you lose Elton Jenkins and you're toast. That's what happened last year. And then Gutekunst said, well, screw that. I'm not good. That's not going to happen to us again. I'm signing Aaron Banks. I'm drafting Anthony Belton. You know, I think that scenario really bothered them because if Elton Jenkins doesn't go down, it might have been a little bit of a different game.
The defense did its job.
Yeah. And if they could have kept Jalen Carter off of Love and not had all the holding penalties – it could have been a little bit different.
Yeah.
I think the endearing lesson from Philadelphia was they needed to get more physical.
Yeah.
Not physicality, that's not a word.
Right.
They needed to get more physical. Well, that's like what this entire offseason has been on the offensive line especially.
To get to the Super Bowl, they got to be able to compete with Detroit, Philadelphia, Tampa Bay to some degree with their big offensive line. That's what the NFC is now. You gotta get past those guys.
Yeah, it's gonna be big. So let's wrap things up very quickly and talk special teams because did have the chance to talk to Brandon McManus in the locker room. It's really funny because I understand he's, you know, 30 plus, but 32, 33 years old. He's been in the league a long time, been in, you know, Super Bowls and all. But I guess
34. He just
he's 34.
34 on July 25th.
Spring chicken for a kicker
because I wrote it.
That's right.
Yesterday. So
34.
That's why
yeah,
I know.
Yeah. Exactly. But it's funny because, you know, I thought about Rich Bisaccia's comments, and because we know we're asking about the kicker because he's 28 or 29 now. He missed a 50,
he missed a kick.
Was it a 51, 52 yard?
It was a 50.
I think it was 51.
Was it 50 middle? I want to say it was 50 middle, but wide right.
It was 50 middle. Because he made a 51 and a 52.
Into the wind, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
But it was funny because, you know, we asked Rich about even just the hot start that he's been on. And, you know, Brandon said, well, I mean, they paid me to make kicks. But I do, to his credit, when we talked to him, he acknowledged, like, okay, I know what happened after Mason Crosby left. There was some rocky roads that they had. But just, again, just that stability that, you know, he's brought here. And but one thing that he talked about that stood out a lot was just that continuity with Daniel Whelan, Matt Orzech. Like, it's just turned into a really smooth operation. You know, takeaways from what, you know, Bisaccia said about it, but, you know, just what the special teams has looked like up to this point.
What did Brandon McManus say about the missed kick?
He said, out of the way. He said, it was my best kick I've had since I've been in training camp.
He said that?
Yeah, he said, he's like, that might have been my best kick since I've been out here. No. He thought it was good.
He had a lot of distance on that, though.
Yeah.
That was pretty high into the wind.
I heard them talking about it afterwards, and I think it was Orzech or Whelan said, I thought that was going to draw back. It looked like it was going to draw back, and it never did.
Yeah.
So it's funny that the thing we're writing about now is when a guy misses.
His one kick.
Yeah.
You know, that's what we get on him for, his one miss. So, but things have changed.
Yeah. I joke. He's 28 of 29.
Yeah.
Mason Crosby's never been that good in camp. And Mason Crosby was a damn fine kicker, but he's never been that good in camp. Like that, it is hard to emphasize just how good 28 of 29 is. Even today, which was the windiest day of camp so far, not that we minded on the sideline. That was nice, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Just kind of have that cooling-off effect. That was nice.
Except for that damn smoke.
The air quality is awful.
I know it.
You can't see the Legacy Hotel from the sideline. That's a problem.
That's true.
I was really wondering whether LaFleur would take him inside.
It was
because
bad.
Because... that's not great for your lungs.
No.
For any of us to do it. But I suppose they're better athletes than we are. So
even today, when the wind was at its fiercest, it was steady, he misses 50 middle and then he makes 51 and 52. Just right down the
different hash.
No issue.
Everything hits the net. So you have no problem figuring out whether he made it or not. From our standpoint on the sideline, sometimes it's hard to tell whether he made it, especially if it goes over the goalpost. But he just puts everything in the net, and so it's like easy peasy.
You know, that 51-yarder cleared by maybe 3 yards, right?
Yeah.
And so Pete Doherty sails up next to me before he kicks from 52. He's like, what do you think? You want to make this, have the distance? And I'm like, well, you know, just barely based on the last kick. And then he makes 52 by a few yards. Like, it's almost like it's just target practice for him.
It is.
Bottom line is that this is a kicker who's completely locked in the zone. And we don't have to rail against bad kickers, which makes me very happy.
I guess they probably don't care that the Irish guy is in an ice facility somewhere unable to be contacted. Maybe they don't need, but they do. They do need to back off on.
Just got real there.
That is true.
They need to. You don't want to overkick the guy.
No.
You know, so
29's a lot through a week, isn't it? It seems like a lot.
It seems like a lot. Yeah, it does.
It'll be interesting once, you know, family night. They get into Lambeau. It'll be interesting to see him, you know, in a different setting, because Rynitschke Field, he's just completely made that his
he
little brother.
It.
Yeah, he owns it.
I'm surprised they haven't, like, kicked to the other end just to test them a little.
Too easy.
That's true. But it's fascinating. He'd said, like, his training, it was different this year, because he said after a while it becomes a little mundane, like the same thing. So I went blank on the name, but like has a new trainer, same guy that was training Travis Kelce this summer. He talked about that, and he said he was just going through just different methods and just trying to work on his game. He said he feels in good shape, and even Rich Bisaccia said he looks like a 22-year-old out there
Bisaccia
training.
Bisaccia told him, and I thought that was really interesting, he told him, come to camp like a 22-year-old, and you can kick you know, till you're 34, which you are right now. But he basically told him, you come to camp looking like a 22-year-old and you're going to kick him for a long time. Yeah. So apparently he heeded that advice.
Yeah, which is interesting, too, because especially after going 20 of 21 last season and, you know, had a couple of game winners, he was still trying to evolve and still trying to work on it. But, like, that's the key if you want to have a long career in this thing. So, finally, since I wasn't here last year, I'm going to ask you guys, what can I expect at family night?
You know, the big question is whether or not there's going to be live tackling. We saw that on Tuesday, and then it kind of got a little hairy there. We don't know if there's going to be live tackling or not Saturday night.
I don't remember if they had it last year or not.
I feel like they might
have. Yeah, but it's always the third stringers.
Yeah.
He's not going to put anybody significant out there. But it's always nice to see, like, a real football play. To me, for us, it's a practice.
Yeah.
It really is, except we get to sit in the press box and have a really nice view of everything that's going on. For fans, it's a big old tailgate, and I can't imagine them being more bored watching a practice than they are, but they're not watching the practice.
Yeah. The fireworks. They're there for the fireworks.
Yeah, the fireworks. The players are there for the fireworks, too.
Yeah.
Oh, that's that. Two things about family night. That is the one practice every camp where my back doesn't hate me after, because we get to sit. And it's also the deadest locker room of camp every year, because players are sprinting from the locker room out to the field to see the fireworks.
I'm always like, dude, you haven't seen a fireworks before? Where were you July 4th? And I'm like, come to my neighborhood. They're still shooting stuff off, and you can
I do not like fireworks either. So.
But, yeah, it's a unique environment for a practice,
yeah,
for
some
sure.
Some of them get to bring their kids.
Yeah. That's always neat when they bring the family out of the tunnel onto the field. But, it's a unique environment. I don't know if it's 80,000, but 70,000 fans for practice inside an NFL stadium. And it's Lambeau Field. And I just like that I get to sit down.
Yes, and not breathe in the air.
No,
that's going to be really nice. It was really funny, though, because I went back and looked at the video I shot from practice. You can just see a haze around the players from that air quality. It is. So, yeah, that's going to be something to monitor for sure. And, like I said, have family night on Saturday, and they'll be getting closer and closer to August 9th for that first preseason games. I know, right? Take a deep breath. It's here now, Spoon. No turning back.
It's just going. This is usually, I always thought like the third week was the grind week, but I'm sort of feeling it now because there's been how many practices this week?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just kind of been day after day after day, and we've had one day where we didn't have to be out in the bake, getting baked. I'm not complaining, but it's just been different. It's been different.
It's interesting that you say that, because for me, it's always been the first 2 weeks of camp are the dog days. That's the grind, because after that, you have family night, obviously, at the end of that second week, and then you're into more of a repetitive-type schedule with the preseason games, and you get into that.
Get some off days, too.
Those first 2 weeks, that's when you're white-knuckling a little bit, and we're in it right now. But, some off days coming up.
I always tell people going back to work is like jumping into the deep end. There's no, wading into the shallow end. Mm-hmm. We go from vacation to boom.
That's true.
That's
true.
When I try to explain kind of, my calendar year, my schedule of people, I say there's two times a year where it is just a whiplash transition. It's at the start of camp when you go from zero to 100 miles an hour in a day, and it doesn't slow down. And then the end of the season.
Exactly.
Where you're 100 miles an hour to slam the brakes.
Right. Yeah.
And I've got the postseason grade series now, which kind of helps me to ease into that transition a little bit, which I enjoy, because otherwise it's just such a whiplash where you're just
For how many months? August, September, October, November, December. Let's count 6 months. You have this routine of being at a certain place at a certain time every week, every day of every week.
Yeah.
And then, bam!
It's
you can
all
point,
here.
You can point That's to so the true. Schedule. Like in our livelihood, true. You can point to a day on the schedule and even a time. You can say, okay, I know what I'll be doing at that time.
Yeah.
That's how repetitive and regimented the NFL is.
True.
And then you have those 6 weeks and 6 months in the offseason. You're like, I don't know.
Yeah.
That is
it's all
true.
Up in the air.
But I will say, though, after spending a month in Kentucky where in the morning I watched Bluey with my nephews and in the evening watched Young and the Restless with my mom, oh, I was ready for football.
I don't know how you handle this, Spoon, but I've gotten pretty good. Those 5 weeks between minicamp and training camp, I make it a point to do nothing.
No,
I make it a point to be so bored that I'm watching the paint dry just to recharge. Because once that first day comes,
it's over.
It doesn't stop. And those first 2 weeks are the toughest, right? You got to like have that energy to get through it.
I have a routine. Like I get up, I eat breakfast, I go to the couch, and I watch Gunsmoke.
There you go.
On Pluto, like for two or three episodes. Then I decide if I'm going to go into the garden or if I'm going to walk the dog or. You know, if I have a game that night, I'll start working on the lineups. But, I don't even want to look at my phone during that time.
Oh, it was beautiful. I love not being on the phone. I worried about social media. I was like, the Packers this offseason did nothing but get married. I said that's all I needed to handle. Didn't have to deal with anything else. So I had no complaints this summer. But, I'm not watching The Young and the Restless anymore.
Jordan Love did tell me that he had a wonderful time at his wedding. He said the drinks were flowing. It was a good time right there on the
They had In-N-Out burger, too.
Yeah,
did you see the plate, like the dinner? I happened to see it because I follow him on Instagram. And I was looking at the plates of dinner, and I'm like, what the hell is that? It was like this tiny little.
Got to ask him about
little,
it. Ask
yeah,
him about it.
I don't know if it was a vegetarian or if it was some sort of weird California fish or something, but I was like, who's going to get full on that?
No. Well, they did have
a lot of cake.
That's what the drinks are for.
You can say, well, they had In-N-Out Burger. Oh, I saw one of those pictures.
Hut,
yeah,
right?
So, that's the key. After a couple of cocktails or something like that, you're going to want a cheeseburger.
Give me a buffet. Okay.
Give me a buffet.
With really bad mixed vegetables, and soggy green beans and
meat and veggies.
Can't go wrong with the meat and veggies. All right, let's wrap this up and let's get ready for a family night coming up on a Saturday and get ready for another week and head into preseason. But with that said, we thank you all for checking out the Green 19 podcast. For Ryan Wood, Tom Silverstein, I'm Dominic Yates. We'll see you next week.